I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 66.
The Fan.
Hi, Mike and the Mad Dog on the Fan. Cardinals and Tigers, weather permitting, sounds like they will get a window of opportunity, as they like to say, to play this game this evening. And it's quite apropos that Tim McCarver should be doing the Cardinals and the Tigers, since he lived the Cardinals and the Tigers many moons ago. Timmy, good afternoon.
How are you, Mike?
I'm fine. Dog is on the phone. He'll be here about 2 seconds.
Okay.
But, you know, does it seem, did you get a little nostalgic when this series started, thinking about the Tigers and the Cardinals?
Yeah, I did. And I'm going to get, I think, more nostalgic tonight when Bob Gibson throws out the first ball. I didn't see Bob last night, but I know he's in town. I've heard from friends, and I don't want to call him to bug me, and I don't want him to call me and to bug him, and I don't want him to call me either. You don't really have any time unless you're at the ballpark. And I hope to see Bob tonight. And, of course, you know, you can't help but get nostalgic to, you know, when you talk about Gibson in the 68 series. And I think I've told you and Chris before, I mean, we're going into game five, you know, we had a 3-1 lead, and we knew Gibson was in the wings. He was going to be fully rested for game seven. And I think in retrospect that our dependence on Gibson could have been one of the reasons for our demise in a weird sort of way.
And interesting, as Doug and I have alluded to, not only lead 3-1 this great Cardinal team that won it in 64 and won it in 67, mm-hmm. but gets a 3-run homer from Cepeda to start game five. I mean, you think that the other team's about to crumble.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in the first inning, Cepeda hit the home run in the first inning off Lolich, and Lola shut the door after that. And also, you know, Ron Davis, a right fielder who started game five, Roger Maris didn't start. And Maris had told us for a month, and we knew we were going to win it. We won it by, 14, 15 games or so. And Maris had told us for a month, regardless of how well McLean pitches, don't worry about Denny McLean. Our problem's going to be Lolich. And if the Tigers win it, and the Tigers were winning it handily in the American League. And sure enough, Roger was right, but Roger didn't start in games 2 and 5 against Lolich, but Ron Davis, a young outfielder, started. And obviously this is not to knock Ron Davis 37 years later, but a ball hit by Lolich in the seventh inning dropped in front of Ron Davis, and had Roger been playing in the outfield, I know he would have caught the ball.
And wow. Roger Maris, as old Yankee fans or baseball fans know, has always been known for one thing. He was a tremendous outfielder.
Oh, people really don't know. Not only a tremendous outfielder, a tough base runner. I mean, you're talking about a guy, when you needed the second baseman or shortstop taken out of a play, he would take him out all the time. Going from first to third, getting a jump on second base to score. All of those things Maris was schooled in about as well as anybody I played with.
You know, Timmy, I would also think that you would feel confident going into Game 7, not just because of Gibson, but because Lolich was pitching on 2 days' rest, and you had beaten Lomberg the year before on 2 days' rest.
Right.
So you probably felt, you know what, we worked with this guy one time last year on 2 days, we won. We'll do the same thing with Lolich. So you probably were shocked that through 5-6 innings, he's throwing shutout baseball there.
You know, the interesting thing about that, Chris, is nobody even thought about 2 days' rest in those days.
It was no big deal, right?
It was no big deal. I mean, Gibson started 4 games and relieved for 4 2/3 in another in over a 13-day period in 1964. 4 starts,
wow.
4 2/3 innings relief to win the last game of the season. And 3 of those 4 games were complete games. 1 game was a 10-inning game in Game 5 in Yankee Stadium.
You know, Tim, I always say this, and we've talked about this in the past, but that team is 1 game away from being recognized as a great all-time dynasty.
You're right. Had we just won one more game, you know, I've thought about that for the last 35 years, and it ain't fun, I'll tell you.
Should Kurt Flood have caught that north of triple, Tim? I mean, nothing, top 7, bases loaded, he hits the ball that I guess he got a late jump on. I don't recall it. I don't know if Mike does.
Yeah, I think he got stuck in the mud. I think there were two things in that series that that were perpetuated by the press that are wrong. Number one, that Flood misjudged the ball in center field. He didn't misjudge any. I've seen Kurt Flood catch balls like that, you know, time and time and time again. He got stuck in the mud. His right foot with his first step, he was stuck in the mud and couldn't make the change. The other thing that was perpetuated and that is just flat out wrong is that that Lou Brock should have slid in game five. I mean, the only way, in my view, the only way for him to have made it home was to get his foot in between Freehand's legs. Freehand did a marvelous job in blocking the plate, and had Lou slid, he would have been out by a farther margin than he was.
And I thought he was, you know, I've only seen replays of that, Tim. It's almost like Giambi and Jeter in that Oakland game. It almost looks like he's safe on that play, you know that?
Well, it was close. You know, it was very, very close. Doug Harvey was the home plate umpire, but the key thing, whether he was out or safe, I mean, we argued that he was safe, but the key thing is that Lou has lived with this all these years, that he should have slid, and everybody thinks that, and they're wrong.
Wow.
You know, it's funny, Tim, you go back to 64 in the book when you talked about with Halberstam about Mantle's homer in that game about you and Gibson saying, can you believe how strong this guy really is?
Oh, my gosh.
And he hits that homer, and then I think about 68 where you guys probably had a conversation about how good K-Line is after all those years,
yeah,
because he was really a classy hitter.
Yeah, classy guy, classy hitter, classy fielder, classy base runner. Everything Al Kaline does and did is riddled with class. But you're talking about Mantle, and I've told you guys before that the one thing, you know, I didn't turn 23 until the day after the series was over, so I was very young and very impressionable, and believe me, Mantle impressed me. I mean, to catch behind him, you could almost feel the aura. You could feel the presence of him and the power of him. And that's not, you know, just retrospective thinking. I mean, you're obviously, when you're that young and you grow up and you just look up and you think, here you are in Yankee Stadium, you know, for game five, it's tied two games apiece, and I'm catching behind Mickey Mantle. I mean, if you really think about things like that, you really can't play. I mean, you're so intimidated. But fortunately, we weren't intimidated in 64 nor 68, but we won one and lost the other.
And he heard you guys in 64 because game three, after Kurt Simmons' gem, I remember Kurt Simmons telling a story how he left the dugout, and he said he was going down a runway, and he heard the roar, and he says, I know Mantle hit the ball out of the park because he was the first batter up to Barney Schultz, the knuckleball that never flooded never got to your mitt, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's right. And I didn't realize until about 5 or 6 years ago that Mantle had told his teammates. I think, well, it was farther, it was longer than that, because I think David Halberstam told me when he was interviewing me for October 1964, he told me that Mantle had told his teammates that, boys, this game's over.
Well, I guess, in the story to me was that Elston was on deck and Mantle had made an error in that game.
That's right.
And he said to Ellie, go back. And Ellie says, the only time he ever did that in his life, he said, go back, this game's over. Because he was mad at himself, I guess, because he had made an error in the outfield on a throw, if I remember right. That's how you got your one run in that game.
I think that's right, yes.
You know, Timmy, it's funny here. This series, well, first of all, we got a lot going on with Kenny Rogers. We had Morgan on yesterday. He had him. He had a major problem with the scuffing of the balls. Some people say, they all do it. What's the big deal? Tommy John, you know, Sutton, people like that. I'm sure you caught guys who scuff balls. And then you have Rogers that you caught the other night. Give me your why don't you tell us right now your take on the whole Kenny Rogers situation?
Well, number one, from a catcher standpoint, you never catch a guy who scuffed a ball. You always hit against guys who scuff balls, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yes.
Because you never reveal the guys who scuff it. And often, the only guy that I knew that was loading up a ball when I caught him was Lou Burdette. And Lou told me, and we had a sign for the pitch out, and about 10 years after Lou retired, I played in a golf tournament with him, and I was kidding him about loading up the ball, and Lou said, I never loaded up the ball. I said, Lou, you know, we had a sign for it. Well, I was your catcher. And he refused to admit it. I mean, that's one of the funnier parts. But Kenny, I mean, you know, since the game began, I mean, guys are trying to get an edge. Hitters are trying to get an edge with corking the bat and stuff like that, grooving the bat or whatever they do to get the edge. And a lot of guys do it, and Kenny got caught. And it was blatant, and nobody can convince me that was dirt on his hands. I know the difference between dirt and Lantar.
Yeah, so did La Russa. Now, a couple things, Tim. Number one, were you? Was there any chance you were tipped off to this before the game, or did you just pick it up during the game?
Not at, our cameras picked it up. I didn't pick it up.
Oh, okay.
Our cameras picked it up. Bill Webb, our director, you know how – I mean, our cameras, any cameras, if you have that many cameras, I think we're using 14 cameras. Well, you use that many cameras, and you're all over the place. I mean, you don't, nothing escapes you in the ballpark and certainly on the field. And it was shown to me, and Pete said, is this, you know, something we can – I said, well, it's, you know, it's so blatant, it's Pantar. And you almost have to, you have to show it.
Now, La Russa,
otherwise, you're not doing your job.
Right. No, absolutely.
We agree. Show it.
No, you had to do that. Now, La Russa said the next day in a press conference that he knew about it before the game from watching him during the playoffs. He had seen it on his hand, and he knew it before the playoff. If that's the case, and he said that in the next day, if that's the case, do you think he was wrong and he in any way didn't do his job by not going out and undressing him and getting thrown out in the first inning?
I was surprised that Tony said that too, and that because had he known that, why didn't he go out there in the top of the first inning? Because if he goes out there in the top of the first inning, then it becomes a Jay Howell situation. That happened back in 1988 when the Dodgers played the Mets, and Harry Wendelstedt found Pantar in Howell's glove, and he was suspended for 3 games, and it was appealed, and they eventually dropped it to 1, I believe. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you go out there when he's got it on him, instead, once we show it, you know he's not going to go back out in the second inning with Pantar on his hand. I mean, nobody would do that.
But, you know, La Russa's going to get the last laugh, Timmy. If he wins this series, and now he's up 2-1, and he doesn't embarrass baseball, which he didn't do on Sunday night, then Tony looks like a hero. So, and if he ever lost this series because, you know, Rogers goes out there in Game 6 and shuts the door on him, then he looks like a goat. So a lot riding on it right now for Tony La Russa.
Well, I think a lot's riding on it anyway. I mean, you know, right now I think the primary – problem is the Tigers hitting. I mean, they've got 3 guys who are 0-34, Granderson, Polanco, and Ivan Rodriguez, and as Steve Horn, you know, our director of information, pointed out last night, these are irreplaceable players. You can't put anybody in. You're not going to put Vance Wilson in for Ivan Rodriguez. You're not going to put Ramon Santiago in at second base for Polanco, and you're not going to replace Granderson. So the obvious thing that the Tigers have to have production out of these 3 guys, and I'm telling you, you know, I underestimated this Cardinal pitching staff. I underestimated Jeff Weaver. I underestimated Jeff Supon. You think about this: when you go inside the numbers of Jeff Supon against the Mets, he gave up 5 hits in 15 plus innings
against a terrific hitting team, too.
Against maybe arguably the best hitting team in baseball. Some people would say the Yankees at the end of the season; they're probably right. But let's say the second best hitting team in baseball.
Timmy,
and a team stocked with left-handed hitters.
When you look at the 0-34, of course, we're talking with Tim McCarver here. When you look at the 0-34, let's touch on 2 guys who was Pudge hasn't hit the whole postseason, so let's leave him out for a second.
No, he had 172.
Right. Maybe he's hurt. Who knows what the deal is. But let me get to the other 2 guys, because Granderson killed the Yankees, mm-hmm. and Polanco killed the A's. Mm-hmm. Now, do you want to give – and I asked Morgan this question yesterday, and he just thought they were different types of pitches. Do you want to give the Duncan and the Cardinals a lot of credit
Absolutely.
For how they've pitched them, or is it just the type of pitchers they've faced here in this
Well,
series?
the one thing, you know, scouting – Scott Reed is the go-ahead scout for the assistant to Dave Dombrowski, and one of the scouts. He made a great point before the series. He said, as scouts, we're not interested in what happened 3 years ago or even 2 months ago. We want to know what happened last week. And if you take the scouting, the guys who scouted the Cardinals knew what happened last week. And what happened last week is Polanco was hitting balls out over the plate. And because of his shoulder, in my view, now Jim Leland denies this, but because of his separated shoulder, the Cardinals have been wearing him out inside. I mean, wearing him out. Hmm. And Granderson, they're throwing balls out of the strike zone. You get ahead to a first ball.
He swings at anything.
And you get him out on your terms. That's exactly
right. See, the Yankees threw him, in retrospect, and I didn't know how good he was or anything, but the Yankees threw him too many strikes is what it came down to.
Too many strikes. You can be wild in the strike zone, and I think the Yankee pitchers were. But the Cardinals pitchers haven't fallen for that right now. And with Rodriguez, it's the other way. Pudge is sitting on balls inside, and the Cardinals have worn him out away. So these guys entered the game. You can say what you want about Tony La Russa, but this guy, you talk about managing. In my view, he's managed in the postseason better than any postseason he's ever had.
Wow. Now, what would you do for a fifth game now that we've had a rainout, Tim? Would you go back to Reyes because he would pitch great, or would you let Weaver pitch on full rest?
Well, right now, you know, you give Weaver another day because of the rainout yesterday. So, you know, if it depends on whether you go up 3-1. I think if he goes up 3-1, he may go ahead and start Reyes. But, you know, that's one point. The other is to go for the throat and go with your best and come back with Weaver and then Carpenter and then Supon if necessary.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, when you have a chance, don't let him off the hook, especially
that's right.
That sixth game is on
that's
the road.
Right. And plus, the rainout had, you know, the Cardinals basically are dealing with three starters. I mean, Reyes had a good game in game one. But can you depend upon
no,
I mean,
you cannot.
I don't think so.
No.
So the biggest difference in the starting pitchers is the Cardinals are dealing with three pitchers. The Tigers are dealing with four.
And the big difference for the Cardinals in this series, and maybe they've just gotten lucky as the series went on or healthier, Edmonds and Rowland starting to look like they can swing the bat, and they look healthier, especially Rowland, and Edmonds has gotten some hits too. These guys looked like they should retire in the Mets series. I mean, they had some
right.
of the worst swings you ever
saw.
You're
right. You're exactly right. I mean, Rowland, they were – the Mets were telling Rowland in so many words that we're going to throw you high fastballs, and he couldn't get around them.
And now
one after another.
And now they're nine for 21 in the,
yeah.
so far in this series.
Yeah, I know. And Edmonds is getting a shot in his left foot, which is excruciating every time he's hitting the ball of his left foot. He gets a shot every day before every game. And he's banged up. I mean, rarely does a team as banged up as the Cardinals even get to the World Series for obvious reasons. They're too hurt. But, I mean, these guys really deserve a lot of credit. Yeah, obviously the Tigers do, too. But because the Cardinals are in such physical, you know, they're physical wrecks. But I agree with you. There's certainly evidence that Rowland and Edmonds are a lot healthier.
Did you like Johnny Keene and Shane Deans playing for both guys, Timmy, or not?
Oh, yeah, I love these guys. Red Shane Deans is 83 years old, and he keeps going along. He's going duck hunting this winter, he told me, and down in Arkansas. He's a legend down there, and he's just one of the sweetest guys that I've ever run into, and I'm you know, he's like a father to me.
And how about Keene in 64?
Well, Johnny Keene gave me a chance to play in the big leagues. I mean, they had to make a move in 1963, and they traded Gene Oliver to Milwaukee for Lou Burdett, and that opened things up for me, and I became a regular catcher. But you know, I owed a lot to Johnny Keene.
You know, one thing, Tim, I wanted to go forward, and especially he hasn't been on base yet, Granderson, so it's not a factor yet, but I thought and Molina hit, obviously, and had the big homer and
right.
killed the Mets with eight hits in that series. But
right.
I thought the biggest thing he did was he completely shut down their running game. I mean, they wouldn't even run Beltran with two out, no one on in the eighth inning of a tie
right.
game. They didn't run Reyes a lot except for one night when he ran, and Tucker got one where he got a pitch out and he threw it in the center field. But other than that, you knew he was a good – you heard he was a good catcher. His defensive play really changed, I thought, a lot of that Mets series.
I don't think there's any question about it. You know, a team like the Mets who depended on the speed, that was part of their mix, speed, power, the balance in the lineup and everything with Wright, Reyes, and Beltran. He shut them down, and Rodriguez is doing that to the Cardinals too. I mean, neither team in the World Series has a lot of speed, but these two catchers, there has not been an attempted stolen base yet in the series, which is an interesting point.
Are you surprised how good, or did you know Molina? I mean,
I knew he was good.
Let's face it.
I mean, you know, and I'm not being mean or anything, but when you hit 216,
right, you got to be able to play.
You better do a lot behind the plate, yeah. And that's why Tony keeps him behind the plate because of the extraordinary way that he handles his pitchers and can throw.
And I worry about Detroit right now, Timmy. I mean, they had a week layoff. It's been cold. They didn't do anything against Carpenter. Then they sit around in a rainout. Then they go to go back out there tonight, be a cold night. It's a rough time to break out of a hitting slump in these kind of conditions, you know?
I think that's a point. You know, initially I discounted the layoff. I thought the layoff was going to be better for the Tigers with the Cardinals, of course, clinching on Thursday and then having to start the series on Saturday. I really thought the layoff would be good for the Tigers, but I'm revising that thinking. Because I'm not too sure that that's the case. I think the combination of the Cardinals playing, on a regular fashion, having the one off day on Friday before the series open, their pitching right so far in the first three games has just been much, much better than the Tigers hitting.
And Timmy, tell me, with the Cardinals, is this teaching or is this just personnel? Because, you know, you watch a lot of baseball, and really all we ever see is, you know, fastball, cutter, slider. They got hellacious big curveballs. I mean, Wainwright,
right.
Carpenter, are they teaching big curveballs, or these guys just happen to have big curveballs?
Well, I think Carpenter's had it. You know, he had it with Toronto, but a lot of, you know, I mean, this Dave Duncan sees things that other pitching coaches don't see.
I mean, how about the Wainwright curveballs to the Mets? They were unbelievable.
I know it. I know. And the 2-2 strikeout of Beltran. Everybody talking about how Beltran froze on that ball. Let me tell you, nobody hits that pitch.
You know,
nobody.
You number two strikes
on him.
Nobody
see
hits that pitch.
You don't see that big curve anymore, you know?
You don't. I mean, that type 12-6 curveball. And it's similar for Carpenter. It's not as good as Wainwright. But, you know, you look at a guy like Supon, who mixes things up, who changes speeds. He doesn't have a big breaking ball, but he throws it enough. And just his control is off the fastball, in and out, the ability to get left-handed hitters out. I mean, you know, Duncan deserves a lot of credit. The pitchers are the guys who have to execute the pitches, and I'm not trying to take that away from him.
I mean,
that
Wainwright's got one of those Camilo Pascual curveballs.
Yeah,
you know,
Felix Rodriguez. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting going into next year to see whether the Cardinals make a starter out of Wainwright.
Yeah, tough call.
They can go one way or the other on him.
Good job, Timmy. Thanks for 20 minutes. Enjoy the game tonight.
Enjoy it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, very much.
Carver on the fans.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.